restless, thinking a lot of things because it's already at the end of the day, and so you may be thinking of a lot of things. One way is counting the breathing is also a very good way for us to sort of settle our distraction, because the breathing, the sensation of breath at the tip of our nose is very subtle, so we tend to just lose it. But if you count your breathing, when you exhale, you count your breathing, you find that you have something to link yourself onto, and that will help you to slowly, the number will take over the distractive thoughts and settle on the number. And so you just basically counting, knows your breathing and count your breathing. And at the end, once your mind is pretty settled and you feel like you counting the breathing become an extra burden to you, then just let go of the number and just observe your breathing as it is. So that's when you have too much distraction. Okay, so those are the common problems that most people have. And again, meditation has to come with practice. It is not easy to do it in a sudden because we didn't actually prepare ourselves well enough. Our prerequisite was not done properly, because thinking of, like, your mind is thinking of a lot of active things. In a sudden, you want it to be quiet. The momentum of moving is still there. So even if you want to quiet down a car, you have to slow. If you got emergency brake, then it's going to be quite difficult, right? So same thing, we need to slowly settle it. And so if we say, okay, tonight I'm coming to Dharma talk and I'm going to do some meditation, so start from 4 o'clock, you start to have less chatting and you start to sort of calm yourself, bring your mind to yourself and learn to quiet yourself. Then by the time 7 o'clock you come and sit down, maybe it will be easier, right? But if you have been rushing, doing a lot of things in the last minute and still talking, and at the end when we want to sit down, it's not easy. Not only that, you find that in our daily life, we tend to look outwards a lot as well. How much of your time in a day do you actually train yourself to say, okay, bring my mind back here, focus on what I'm doing? How much time do we spend ourselves, like when you're walking, okay, let's be mindful of my step. When I'm pouring the water, let's be mindful on that I'm pouring the water. Even when you're sitting in the lecture hall, can you please concentrate 100% to the lecturer? And not trying to look at your phone under the table. So we have a lot of distraction, especially this day with all this technology. It makes us like, we got addicted to a lot of things. You find that once you finish the class, go out, immediately everyone take out their phone and check. And even in the class, sometimes under the table, we start to message. So you find that our mind tests get carried away. So training our mind to be mindful on what we are doing and tell ourselves to have us to sort of allocate a time for ourselves. Okay, this is what I want to do. Don't get carried away. Keep bringing ourselves back. And this kind of discipline, this kind of training of mind will become a prerequisite, and which helps it to become easier when we come to meditation. Okay? Alright, so today's topic is joyful with others, peace with ourselves, with oneself, and why celebrating the success of others is an immeasurable treasure. Alright, so this is a topic which is actually similar to the theme of the Bodhi Night this year. Anyone knows what this topic means? What does he want to tell you? Joyful with others, peace with oneself. What does it mean? Anyone have an idea? What does, if you do not know the, if you have not heard about the discussion of the Bodhi Night theme, and you do not know the theme of the Bodhi Night, if you just look at this topic, what was in your mind?
It's one of the four immeasurables.
One of the four immeasurables.
Compassion, loving kindness, it's one.
Appreciative joy.
Yeah. So this is the appreciative. Yeah. All right. So this is one of the four immeasurable. Yes. All right. So joyful with others, peace with oneself. That is that. What it actually means is that rejoice with others' happiness when you see others are happy, feel happy for them, or other people are successful, feel happy for them. And we say peace with oneself. Not only that we try to be happy, but we don't want to be like hypocritic kind of happiness. Happy at the same time with a mind of goodwill, really feel happy for the person, and with a mind of equanimity. Just now he mentioned the word equanimity. That means we treat everyone equally, whether it's someone whom we like. For example, if your siblings did very well, you probably rejoice with them. But if your friend did better than you, maybe you feel that your mind of rejoice will not develop, right? So equanimity means that we need to, if we have to understand that everyone has to be happy, and if the person put in right effort and become successful, by right we should rejoice. But our rejoice sometimes are not equal to everyone. As we say, our siblings or for mom, their own children become successful, you definitely rejoice. But when other people's children become successful, our mind of rejoice will be different. We may say congratulations, we may say, oh yeah, well done. But that kind of happiness is different to when your own children become successful. So equanimity is be able to have this happiness for others equally. And that's why someone mentioned about the four immeasurable just then. The four immeasurable basically is the cultivation of loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity. So when we practice the Buddha's teaching, a lot of time we talk about life is suffering, everything is impermanent, we need to let go of self-centeredness, we need to free ourselves from attachment. So then there's a question that comes along. If everyone just think of detach, it looks like this world will become very cool, very cold. There's no relationship, everyone detach. But if we understand the Buddha, you find that the Buddha is not as such. The Buddha has a mind of detaching, and not attaching to things as like what how we attach to things. But at the same time, the Buddha can give us warmth and comfort. So learning of Buddhism, when we learn Buddhism, we become very, very cold, don't care, everything is detached. We are actually not learning the real aspiration of the Buddha. So that's something that we need to be very careful about. And that's why even in the Theravada tradition, in the Nikaya, the Buddha talk about the practice of the four stages of mindfulness, how to develop understanding on impermanence, selflessness, but he also talk about the four immeasurable. And at the end, the immeasurable talk about equanimity. That is, be able to understand that everyone are equal in nature, everyone have the same feeling, everyone likes to be happy and peaceful. And since everyone can change, that means whoever is in front of us, although they may not be as close to us as another person, but who knows, in the past or in the future, they could be our relatives and friends. And on the path of practicing the teachings of the Buddha, we will support one another in one way or another, sooner or later. And that's something that we need to remember. That people around us, we tend to think that this person is closer to me. That person is not that close to me. So I have to treat this person who is closer to me better than the other. But if you think about it, in the long, in throughout our life, just even just within this life, there are times that you have your high school friend who are not very close to you, and you don't actually make quite close friend or good friends with this person. But then after you graduated from uni, you may go to a company, and that person happened to work in your team. And this person, because from high school to graduate to finish uni and working, maybe there's 10 years apart. And this person has changed so much. And this person, and you just join the company, and that person helps you a lot. If we think that, okay, so if at time when we were high school, we say, oh, this person is never close to me, this person is not that smart as me, I don't care this person. And so we tend to discriminate according to what is in front of us. We do not know what's going to happen in the long run. So if you understand that, and that everyone can change, and everyone likes to be happy and peaceful, and in our life we are related to one another in many ways. And so now I'm closer to you, but who knows, in 5 years' time, we'll be separated and I'm closer to her. And that can happen. So with this understanding, we then have to understand that, in fact, everyone are equal in nature and everyone keep changing. There's nothing that is fixed and unchangeable. And since there's nothing fixed and unchangeable, and everyone are causes and conditions that support my life, I should treat everyone equally. So that is what we meant by developing the mind of equanimity. With that mind of equanimity, and understand that everyone have the same feeling, everyone likes to be happy and peaceful, then you'll find that you'll be able to rejoice with others better. Now, when we talk about the four immeasurable mind, usually, especially in the Nikaya, when we talk about the four immeasurable mind, we usually refer to them as like meditative methods. So, loving kindness means to give happiness to others. So, loving kindness and compassion, there's slight difference. Sometimes we put them together, loving kindness, compassion, kindness and compassion, but there's a bit of different. Loving kindness means that you love, you like others, and you like to give them happiness. So not necessary that person is in great suffering, but you just like, I go to the universe spotlight. I want to bring happiness to everyone. How can I bring humor to everyone? How can I create the atmosphere so that it's more relaxed? You know, you like to give happiness to others. Everyone is in a potluck, no one is in suffering, right? But, yes?
Could you just clarify what you mean by others and everyone? I know there's some forms of Buddhism that count as not necessarily people, but sentient beings.
Yeah. Well,
which version are you using?
When I talk about others, yes, it's all sentient beings, yeah. But
how can you say that going to potluck isn't causing suffering?
Pardon?
How can you say that going to potluck isn't causing
suffering? I'm not saying, I say there's no suffering.
There is suffering.
There's suffering, yeah.
I mean, a potluck, what I'm talking about is it's not vegetarian. You always have dead animals there.
Okay. Okay, I do not know what kind of potluck is that. Okay, I do not know what kind of potluck is that. Yeah, so I'm just talking about an example of going to a gathering,
when you're saying others and everyone, you are including all sentient beings.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it can be referring to a sentient being, but I'm just taking this example and like just try to highlight the loving kindness that is to try to think of happiness for others. Yes. So that's and it can, so others can means I'm just trying to use others here as an example that you can relate to. For example, we talk about the others here I refer to a bit more to the human being, where you can see that you bring happiness to human being. But of course, I understand what you're talking about. If the pork lard is not a vegetarian pork lard, then there are other sentient beings who suffer.
That's right.
So, but because I'm not sure what kind of pork lard is this, I'm just taking an example.
Is Tommy here? Okay.
All right. So yeah, because I just taking pork lard as an example. I do not know the details of the pork lard. Okay. So that's why I would say that we give happiness to others, and that is a joyful mind, to give happiness to others, and you do want others to be in suffering. So it's a good point that you brought out. It's for the universe to think about. Yeah, when they talk about appreciative joy and at the same time give happiness and happiness to others. So as long as no one wants to go and eat those things, next time they will become less and less. Supply and demand. I think the universe have discussed about this issue a lot, and I think we also mentioned that it should be vegetarian.
In actual fact, it should be vegan.
Yeah. But then there were some people who argue that there are some members because they want to encourage new members to come. Some new members may not be ready to sort of just be vegan or vegetarian as yet. So for the sake of encouraging some new members, they don't mind to be a bit relaxed in certain way. So, but then it all depends on how everyone respond to it. If less and less people, if everyone come to a Buddhist function and knows that it's supposed to be vegetarian and they're happy to just don't touch those, at the end no one's going to touch those things, then at the end there's no demand, it will end. Yeah. So I think, but from my point of view, it should be vegetarian.
Well,
whether it's vegan or vegetarian, now the difference between vegan and vegetarian is more on the daily, is it?
Yeah.
Vegetarian, we don't take egg as well, but there's only milk and cheese that the Mahayana vegetarian would still take, because it doesn't involve killing. But then from some...
It does involve a lot of killing.
Pardon?
It does involve a lot of killing.
Yes, that's because from the way that the farmer sort of try to... In the olden days, if the natural way of getting the milk and the cheese and rear the animals in the proper way, then that's fine. But this day, because profit-minded farmer, then they involve a lot of killing, cruelty to the animals, and that's why you find that from the compassion point of view, sometimes we also try to stop that. But then when you say that's getting milk involve killing or not, that doesn't really involve killing. But then because of the way that the farm is being run, because of the profit-minded farming way of doing it, it leads to that. But during Buddha's time or during the natural cultural way of doing things, it doesn't involve killing. Yeah. So, but for eggs, because you do not know which eggs are is embryonic eggs, and so therefore we avoid eggs. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I did meet some guys in Kuala Lumpur a few weeks ago. And they were Hare Krishnas, and they got some farm about hours away, and they were making milk in the way you described.
Yeah. If you let the cow and the calf enjoy their life and naturally take it, that's very rare.
Yeah,
but the natural way is that way, and that's how it initially comes about, right? So from that point of view, then it doesn't involve killing. But Then this day, because everything is caged, like even hens and things like that, they are caged, and so that's why it involves cruelty to the animals, and because of that, we try to avoid that. Yeah. Again, reduce the demand. Hopefully, reduce the supply.
We should yes. These animals compassion.
Yeah.
Just addressing that point. I mean, you can always choose to buy organic, and that generally reduces those kind of kind of practices.
Yeah. Organic is a bit of a myth. It's more a marketing ploy for the people to buy it rather than the animals. It's done.
I've done quite a fair amount of research into that area, and I think that if it has the right certification, then the practices, including welfare for the animal, are adhered to. So.
Yes.
Well, I would just love to get back to your Dhamma talk.
Yes.
The questions at the end would be better.
So. Okay, sure,
yeah,
thank you.
Please.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so. The four immeasurable, usually when we talk about the four immeasurable mind, they are meditative method. I think most of you are quite familiar with the metta meditation, where you start with wishing yourself well and happy, and then expand it further to the people around us and further. Now, why do we start from ourselves? So when we tell ourselves, may I be free from suffering, free from sickness, free from greed, free from anger, and really feel that I wish myself well, a peaceful, well, and happy. And if you start to have this this happiness, and you start to wish that your family members or your beloved one are free from suffering, free from anger, free from jealousy, free from hatred, free from worries, may they be well, peaceful, and happy. That kind of wish towards people that you believe, you find that it's very strong. And what we want to do is that when we extend further to the people who are not so close to us and to the people who are neutral to us, we want that kind of quality of love be quite similar. And that's why, because you need to have a starting point where you genuinely develop that loving kindness. And so that when you extend further to the people who are neutral to you, your that wish, that wishing people happy, that kind of wish, as the quality of wish is still the same, right? So that is the metta meditation. And then with the compassion, basically we think of a person who is in suffering, we wish the person be free from suffering. So loving kindness means to give people happiness, and compassion means to relieve from suffering. So that person or that sentient beings is in suffering, we try to relieve them from suffering. And appreciative joy. Appreciative joy means to rejoice with others' success. Now, to rejoice with others' success, we can practice it as like metta meditation as well. But you start from, like, say for example, you have a friend who did well in his exam, and you may have a bit of and you really rejoice with your friend, so you rejoice with your friend and wish him be successful and be free from afflictions and be well and happy, and extend it further to others, and at the end you extend to people whom you tend to be jealous about. There are people that we just don't want them to win us. So you start from people that you don't mind, like your siblings, your whoever you always wish them well and hope that they can be successful. You start from those, and then gradually develop further to people that you feel difficult to congratulate. So the method of practice is the same, but the starting point differ a little bit depends on what we want to counteract. Alright, so when we talk about this topic, joyful with others, peaceful with oneself, we are not talking about this, not only about this meditative practice, because meditative practice is good, at least when we are our mind, when we are not confronting the situation, we try to tame our mind, cultivate peacefulness in ourselves, cultivate goodwill in ourselves, and strengthen keep reminding ourselves to wish others well, to have appreciative joy to others. But more importantly, what we want to do with this theme is we want to transform these four immeasurable, especially the appreciative joy, into action. So we want to talk about not about the appreciative joy in meditative practice, but rather in action. Because with the mind of loving kindness and compassion, the mind of appreciative joy, but if you have no action, it still doesn't work. It's just that when we talk about the Noble Eightfold Path, we have the right understanding, right determination. You have right understanding, no determination, no action. It's not going to work. So what we want to talk about now is more on transforming the appreciative joy into action. So when we talk about appreciative joy, it has to come, so this word, this appreciative joy, this term is actually a very nice term. It basically shows that we need to appreciate. You need to have a mind of appreciating others. And have this genuine joy for others. So it's these two words that join together. That's very important. So when we talk about appreciative joy, so if we just say congratulations, but there's no sense of appreciation from your mind, there's no joy from your mind at all, that is not a real appreciative joy. It has actually come from your mind. And that what you're appreciating, something very important is that we have appreciative joy to good deeds, not to unwholesome deeds. So what you're appreciating must be a good deed. Okay, so that's the first thing. Secondly, it comes from your genuine mind and that you really feel joyful. That's the appreciative joy. And now, why do we need to practice appreciative joy? So just now we did mention, we all like to be happy. Everyone likes to be happy. Put ourselves in others' position. Put ourselves in others' position. That when we did something good, or we did something right, we like people to, sometimes we will feel very happy if people acknowledge what we are doing. It's not saying that you're seeking for acknowledgement, but the acknowledgement can become an encouragement to you. So when someone is doing some good deed, we feel that it will be good to give them some encouragement, so we appreciate and we rejoice with them. So share the feelings of others. And secondly, we have to also understand that our life depend on a lot of people's support. And so we are living in where our life is relating to a lot of people. Now, how do you like your life to be? You want yourself to be the only good person? Do you like people around you to be good person as well?
Yes.
You make your life better. But we didn't realize that. So if people can do good deed, we should feel happy for them. If they feel happy, we will be happy as well. And if they are doing good things, they're actually making other people happy as well and making the whole environment better. Right? So we are interrelated to one another. We need to appreciate the existence of others and try to encourage everyone to do good deed. Okay? And we also need to have a sense of gratitude to others. And be thankful for others, for supporting our life, making our life more comfortable, more convenient. So we need to have a sense of gratitude. Now, when we practice rejoicing with others, appreciative joy, in fact, there are different mindsets. We talk about this appreciative joy in general just then. but I actually touch on a few different mindsets. Some people may practice appreciative joy because they thought, I need to show appreciative joy to this person because next time when I'm successful, this person will congratulate me and praise me as well. Or this person is starting a business, I need to give support because I'm planning to have a shop myself as well. I want this person to support me as well. So there are people who do appreciative joy for self-benefit. And that's quite common. It's more like exchange. Is that right? So it may not be really called appreciative joy, but people may still think things of that. Because superficially, you probably can't understand. And for the person themselves, they may know what their intention is. For other people, you do not know. Right? So that's the first. Second, which is very common, is that we practice appreciative joy, especially after we learn the Dharma. We feel that our mind is not broad enough. We can't embrace other people's success, and we know that jealousy is not good. So we practice appreciative joy to overcome our own afflictions. So that's the second type. So we practice appreciative joy. In fact, it's not so much of appreciating others, but it's to use that situation to overcome our own afflictions. That is the second mindset. And the third mindset is that you see that other people are doing good deeds and you feel joyful for them and you feel proud for them and you like to show your appreciation and hope to give them more encouragement. So you can see that when we talk about appreciative joy, there are these different mindsets. It would be good for us to check ourselves when we sometimes congratulate others or praise others, rejoice with others. What kind of mindset do we have? The first type is a very worldly kind of mindset that, yes, last time he or she congratulated me, this time I must congratulate you. So that is a very worldly kind of self-benefit return. And the second one is for purification, is to overcome our afflictions. It's still not thorough enough. And the third one is that you feel happy that other people are doing good deeds and you rejoice. And you really like to express your acknowledgement and encouragement, hope that the person can do better. So there are these three different mindsets. Okay? Now, so the three different mindsets will then lead to different consequences, different results. So when we talk about, we say, why celebrating the success of others is an immeasurable treasure. In fact, this statement may be right or may not necessarily be right in certain sense. Depends on what is your mindset. Right? If your mindset of celebrating success of others is thinking that I need to celebrate and congratulate the person and next time the person will help me, then it may not lead to immeasurable return. So when we talk about treasure, what does it mean by treasure here? What do you mean by treasure here?
Gift.
Okay. Gift or merits, right? Resources. So it's something that is invisible, but due to the good deed that we have done, you find that you have the quality of life that you have, the ability that you have, that kind of merits that you gain for yourself that allows you to move on your life. If you have more merits, when you find that you move on with your life, you have more resources that come along more easily. And when you want to help others, you have more resources as well. Whereas people who have less merits, you find that when they want to do things, sometimes they encounter a lot of obstacles and struggle. Whereas people who have better merits, then you find that when you want to do things, resources seem to come more easily. And these resources or these merits, in Buddhism we say, you don't just ask the Buddha for the merits, you cultivate the merits yourself. So it is with the wholesome deeds that we have done, it leads to the merits. So we cultivate the merits, so you don't just ask the Buddha bestow you with the good luck and bless you with the good merits. We need to cultivate the merits ourselves. And I think when we talk about cultivating merits, you can practice generosity, and appreciative joy is a way to cultivate merits as well. And it can lead to immeasurable treasure. How does it lead to become immeasurable merits? So as we say, the different mindset. So there's a example in the sutra that says that if a person have a flower, buy a bunch of flower, and wants to go and offer to the Buddha, and he has some friends, and his friends, he then invite all the friends to come along, and they all join together and feel very happy, and they all offer the flowers together to the Buddha. So if this person have a flower and this person offer the flower to the Buddha himself alone, he probably become a Prayaka Buddha. But if he has a flower and he has other friends, and he can encourage other friends and tell other friends about the good merits of the Buddha and encourage them to offer this flower together with him, he actually reap more merits. It basically shows what? Shows his mind that's broader, that he rejoices with the one is that he rejoices with the merits of the Buddha, and he also rejoices with his friends' goodwill that they also like to come along to make offerings to the Buddha. So when we talk about rejoicing with others, we tend to think, okay, he's doing a good deed, I rejoice, and things like that. A lot of time we forgot that, say for example, if you are doing a good deed and there are other people rejoice with you, say for example, you are doing a good deed, some people say, oh, I rejoice, can I help you? I say, no, it's okay, I can do it myself. In fact, if there are others who rejoice with what you are doing, you can include them into your project and let them come together to complete the task together. That means you are also rejoicing them. And because of we ourselves develop the good mind, and that we have encouraged others to rejoice with our good deed, and we rejoice them and they are happy, then they encourage others to come along. And this is how this virtual cycle keep going on, that it become immeasurable. And in the Lotus Sutra, there's a saying as well, that a person who is able to rejoice with the sutra, with the Buddha's teaching, and keep telling people how good is the teaching, and that person listen and rejoice and continue to tell others, and this go on and on and on. Everyone learn about, knows the merits of rejoicing, and are willingly to share it with others, and that's how you find that the merits become multiplied endlessly. The Buddha also gives an example in the sutra. It says that a person have a torch of a fire. Okay, and in the village, everyone have no fire. Everyone come and get fire from this person. And this person is happily to allow people to take the fire from him. Do you think his fire will become less? and the fire keep going on and on and on, his merit is immeasurable. So rejoice, open your mind, allow people to share with others, and you find that that's how it become immeasurable. And that's why, how does the merits become immeasurable? It depends on the mindset. If your mindset is like, oh, this is a good thing, I want to keep it for myself only, then you'll be very limited. Does it make sense? Yeah. So that's why when we practice the immeasurable, we need to know that the mindset is very, very important. So when we practice, so firstly, it is very important. So when we practice the appreciative joy and we want it to become an immeasurable treasure, first very important thing is to have this wish that everyone can be well and happy and everyone can improve. So the body-mind is very important. The body-mind of wishing everyone improving. That you, it really feel, because you're, when, say for example, a bodhisattva, they want to help and guide sentient beings. So all sentient beings are your students. When your students improve, you should rejoice with them. If a teacher teach and the students become smarter than you, don't teach anymore. When the students start to ask questions, good question, this is too smart, I don't want to answer anymore. then it's sort of, you're not actually feeling happy for your student, right? If your students have good spiritual foundation and pick up the teachings very quickly and maybe have less affliction and progress very fast. There are incidents as such that happen, like people went for meditation retreat, for many times, and once they brought a new friend to come along. Suddenly this new friend progressed so fast. And the friend said, next time I'm not going to tell him to come anymore. Yeah. So you find that our mind rejoicing. Initially you tell the friend, say, come along, it's good, it helps you to be calm and peaceful and things like that. But in your mind, you never thought that this person would end up to be better than you. So next time I'm not going to inform him about the retreat anymore. So that shows that our mind of rejoicing is not broad enough. But if your mind is that all sentient beings can attain Buddhahood, all sentient beings can progress. So if there's one sentient beings or there's one person that's progressing well, we feel happy for them. So that's why the targeted audience of our rejoicing can be anyone. Can be the Buddha, can the Buddha Bodhisattva, can be our friends, can be the children, can be anyone. Even sometimes you look at the animals, how the animals look after their little baby, that kind of kindness. And sometimes we learn things from the animals and we appreciate, right? So the mind is very important. So the mind, with that mind, then we start to set determination that we want to wish everyone, we want to help everyone to develop better understanding on the teachings, be able to understand what causes suffering, and be able to free from suffering. And so with that body mind and as a determination in ourselves, guided by the right understanding of that everyone are like our big family. Our life rely on a lot of people's support. We need to have a sense of appreciation and gratitude to all people and all sentient beings around us. So once you have this mind of sense of gratitude to all sentient beings, then you find that your mind will be more gentle. You don't hold so much hatred. So the sense of gratitude and appreciation is very important. Secondly, understand that everyone can change. Today, this person looks like a bit more nasty, but it doesn't mean that this person is going to be forever nasty. Today, this person looks very good, very kind, but this person may also change. So don't condemn a person, just understand this is what happened, but things will change. So allow flexibility, allow changes. A lot of time we get ourselves into a lot of suffering is because we attach to a phenomena and think that this person is bad, is forever bad, and we do not, even if the person want to say sorry, we don't want to accept, and we make ourselves suffer, we make the other party suffer. So, sense of gratitude and appreciation, that understanding is very important. Secondly, understand that everything can change. We give everyone a chance. And so in that way, you find that you become more flexible in your life and understand that everything is subject to change and it arises due to causes and conditions. Whatever happened in front of us is the existence happened in front of us is just a phenomena that comes together through many causes and conditions. They are always changing. And so we just need to make sure that whatever has happened here, if we feel that it's not favorable, we just need to supply a bit more better condition so that when you move, change will be a better one. So in the everything is subject to change, like the flow of impermanence. In the flow of impermanence, all phenomena arises due to causes and conditions. And in this flow, you also follow the law of cause and effect. So that's basically the basic principle that we need to understand. That everything is flowing, like in the flow of the river of impermanence. And every section is actually causes and conditions. And they are always in the process of changing. Which direction is it moving to? Depends on if it's wholesome causes and conditions, it moves to wholesome effect. Unwholesome causes and conditions lead to unwholesome effect. And that's the understanding that we need to have. So with that understanding, we understand that we all can change, we all can be better, we all can walk on the Buddha path, including all the sentient beings. And with this sense of gratitude and appreciation, we wish that everyone can progress along the path slowly. So while we walk along the path, there could be people, sentient beings who are our friends, our companion along the way. Sometimes it's this few person, sometimes that few person, but everyone are friends, are companions along the path. And so we wish that everyone of us one day we attend Buddhahood together. So with that, we always wish that everyone can be free from suffering and be well and happy. And so we set our body mind to look upon the Buddha as our example, how the Buddha attained enlightenment and help and guide all sentient beings without feeling jealous. And so we want to learn his example, and then we put into practice. So when we put into practice, firstly, we need to keep listening to good teachings so that we refresh and strengthen our understanding. That's very important. Because if we don't keep listen to teachings, read the sutras and so on, sometimes because we are not enlightened as yet and we still have a lot of habitual tendencies, and we may get carried away and then start to fall into our own way of judgment. So it refers to the teachings, the Buddha's teaching, refers to the sutra, sometimes help us to bring ourselves back to so that we can act in accordance to the teaching rather than our own judgment. Okay, so that listen to teachings is very important. And then secondly, we need to always apply the teaching. So listen to the teaching, then in our daily life, whatever we are doing, try to relate to the teaching and reflect according to the teaching. So when you're dealing with certain incident, someone is doing a good deed. Even people that we do not know, for example, I'm talking here. Some of you, not it gives me encouragement as well, right? Like if you're giving a presentation and your tutor or your lecturer sitting behind giving marks, and if the lecturer smiles, I think it's okay. You see, even a smile can give people encouragement. If the lecturer or the tutor sitting behind have that expression, you start to feel panic, oh, must be something wrong, and why is your friend start to make some sign to you and say something is not right, right? But if everyone's nodding and everyone's smiling and everyone seems to engage in what you're talking about and it looks like what you say is very interesting, you see their eyes, have eye contact with them, and you feel, oh yeah, I think, and slowly you find that you are not that panic anymore, because it looks like you have confirmation from the eye contact that everyone say it's not too bad. Is that right? That is actually a kind of encouragement. Yeah. So even people that we do not know, you find that at the park someone did some good things by picking up the rubbish. Ah, good boy, and or things like that. Encouragement is a good thing, right? So listen to teachings, and then we reflect in our daily life and try to put them into practice through our bodily action, speech, and thoughts. Okay, so for people that we are not very familiar with, sometimes just a nod of head, a smile will actually make people feel comfortable and feel like, oh, I got some acknowledgement and comfort. And then in terms of cultivating the mind, we can practice the four immeasurable during meditation to strengthen our loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity to all sentient beings, so that we are more ready, keep reminding ourselves, strengthening this habit in our mind. Okay, and then in terms of speech, learn to rejoice with others by giving some words of encouragement, words of praise, or even try to put in effort to help with with the promotion, right? For example, you say, oh yes, Bodhina is coming, it's a good performance, and you try to help by opening your mouth and start to tell others. That is using your words and your speech as a sign of your appreciative joy. So appreciative joy is not just the mind, but we can transform it into our action in telling others through our speech. And then in terms of our bodily action, of course we can say that we can say, oh yes, it's good, I want to become in the organizing committee, I want to be in the choir, I want to go and sing, I want to be part of it. That basically also show your appreciative joy. Or when we have the Dharma talk, right? You say, okay, it's to have a Dharma talk weekly is important, and it is not good when there's no audience. So even if the topic that you have heard before, you always come. Because of what? Because I appreciate the committee's effort in organizing the Dharma talk, and it will be good for new people to come along to keep listening to the teaching. And so even if you have heard the topics for many times, it will still come as a sign of support. That's very important. Yeah, a lot of people, when they learn the teachings of the Buddha, they learn the Dharma, sometimes they say, oh, this the universe topics are always for the beginners, because at the uni, you got first year, second year, third year graduated, and then you got new members coming, you can't go in depth, right? Basically, it's usually more introductory topics. So there are people who then say, oh, it's always introductory topics, I don't want to come anymore. But if you want to encourage the newcomers, then you come along to make it merrier. That is appreciative joy. Right, so appreciative joy with your bodily action, or your participation that will give the organizer your great your support and your encouragement. So that is the practice, how we have to keep practicing in our daily life. So we keep practicing, and by doing that, slowly your mind become broader. Because if we don't try to remind ourselves that, then we tend to think about what we have done, what are the good things that we have done, have people acknowledge me, rather than have we acknowledge others. So that's why to remind ourselves to practice appreciative joy is a very good way for us to open up our mind. And you find that if you don't practice appreciative joy, your loving kindness and compassion cannot be thorough as well. Because on one hand, you wish others well and happy. You wish others be free from suffering. But when this person did well, you can't rejoice. So how thorough is your loving kindness? I wish you well, but now you're very well, I'm not happy. That shows that your loving kindness is not thorough. And that's why we say the four immeasurable is actually linked. So loving kindness and compassion, in a broader sense, includes appreciative joy and equanimity. That you really wish everyone well and happy, and that when they are doing good, they are improving, you really rejoice for them. Then you can say that your loving kindness and compassion is more thorough. You don't just wish them well and happy when you are happy. When they are happy, you're not happy. Then that loving kindness and compassion is not thorough, right? So that's why the loving kindness and compassion can only be thorough when we practice together with appreciative joy and equanimity. And with that practice, we keep reminding ourselves about rejoicing with others. And when we start to see the good point of others, learn to rejoice with others, wishing others well, it is also a way for us to reduce our self-centeredness. The reason why we cannot rejoice with others, do you know why we can't rejoice with others? But rejoice with others should be good. But why a lot of time we find that we can't rejoice with others?
Jealous?
Yeah. So jealousy comes from our self-centeredness. This I. We feel that this I has to be better. But how can the other I better than me? And that's why it's attachment to I. Attachment to I. Yes.
Because you're not rejoicing with yourself. That's why they have that problem.
You're not rejoicing with yourself? If it's why are you not rejoicing with yourself?
How you were saying, yeah, I believe in love, light and happiness. But I just think if people can't rejoice with others, it's because they're not feeling good in themselves.
They feel that because the reason why they don't feel happy themselves is because they feel that they are not as good as the other person.
Yeah, so you have to like yourself more. So that you have to like yourself more.
But why do you not like yourself then?
No, I don't.
I'm not saying.
Yeah, I do. But
yeah, so I think it's when they start to compare, they start to compare that this is I and you are better than me, so I just feel like I'm not as good, I can't be happy. I'm not happy now, so I can't, because I'm not happy, so therefore I can't rejoice. Is that what you meant? Because when you start to compare...
I rejoice in everybody.
I'm not referring to it personally, I'm just talking about this is A and B, and the A just feel like I'm not as good as B, I'm not happy now. How can I rejoice? My happiness, I can't, my the happiness just can't come.
Yeah, like I think if people can't feel joy for others, it's because they can't feel joy for themselves.
Yeah, so that's why we say it's self-centeredness that causes suffering. That we cling on to ourselves so strongly, but we didn't realize that this I that we cling on, in fact, is ever-changing. And this I is causes and conditions. It's a combination of causes and conditions, and that even the success that we have, the ability that we have, come from many causes and conditions, many support. And why do we want to cling on to ourselves so rigidly? In fact, you can't cling on to yourself so rigidly, because every moment you're changing. And same thing with the other party. It's just an incident that happened that looks like this one is better than this, but it all depends on how you look at it. So, but we tend to fall into the trap holding on to this phenomena is fixed, and this phenomena is fixed, and we use our own judgment, we think this is better than this one, and therefore we start to get upset. But if you understand that both are changing, are not everlasting, and there's nothing that you can cling on, what are you comparing? So that is the ultimate state that you need to attend. If you realize non-self, then you realize that, in fact, there's nothing to compare. Yeah, but sentient beings are ignorance, and we tend to cling on to ourselves as a fixed entity, and therefore develop very strong self-centeredness. And with this self-centeredness, we start to compare, and we can't embrace others. So what we need to do now is to learn to reduce our self-centeredness, understand. So by understand and appreciate that have gratitude to people around us, and that we understand that everyone in this are interrelated, and we were helping one another. And so transform this before we are able to realize non-self, try to transform into a mind of having appreciation and gratitude that everyone is supporting one another. So it's just like, although we may we still cling on to ourselves as a self, and like our sister or our mom as a fixed entity, but when that person, because that person is a person that we love, or we have sense of gratitude too, when the person is successful, it tends to embrace better. So what you can do as a starting point is to think of all these people are our friends, and they are people that help us in one way or another in life. So we should wish them well. So when that is before we are able to realize non-self, start by having a sense of appreciation and gratitude towards everyone around us. Think of everyone like our companion along the practicing path. So that will be an easier way for us to transform our unhappy mind into a happier mind. And then the next step will be that we want to understand what is the truth of this I and you and he, what is the truth of self. And that will then lead us to another stage, which is realizing non-self, and then that would then lead to the mind of equanimity, where you realize that there's nothing can attach to. But as a starting point, understand interdependency, interrelationship with one another, have a sense of gratitude and appreciation, thanking others will make your mind more gentle and be able to embrace others better, and that will be a good starting point. Okay, all right. So, is there any question that anyone like to ask?
Yeah. If you don't have comparison, then how do you go through improvements? Like?
Yes, we can have we can improve ourselves. Mm-hmm. You can. It's not necessary to compare with others. You just make sure that you yourself is better one day after day. If you are better than your yesterday, you're good.
So use yourself as a guide.
Yeah, that's right.
Improvement with without jealousy.
Yeah. You can also have a, of course you can compare with your friends, but it's not necessary to become emotional. We can compare and then say, okay, he have better marks than me. How did he study? How did he plan his time? In a more rational way, but we tend to fall into emotional feeling immediately, not looking at how much time the person spent in study, how good is the person in their self-discipline, how good is the person in their time management. We don't look into all those and just feel upset because the person is having better result than you. So if we can be more rational and acknowledge, sort of admit that, okay, my result this time is not as good as my friend. Let's review and see what can I do to make improvement. I think that is a better way than competing the marks and get upset and not doing anything about it. Okay, any other question? Yes?
So is it true what goes around comes around? Yeah, you know, we say what goes around when you're throwing it all around. It
yeah.
Keeps on circulating around.
Yeah. When you give, you find that we say it's, but you don't wish, you don't just wish for that. As we say, if you do good deed and you're helping others with goodwill, you find that, yeah, it will just, as we say, it become merits. So whenever you need things, you will come around. Yeah. But is that what you mean?
Yeah, kind of.
Uh-huh. But when we cultivate this appreciative joy or generosity, of course we say when you give, you will come around somehow or later, in some way. But it all depends on your mindset as well. If your mindset is very narrow, that you give $100 donation and you really think, how much merit have I cultivated? When is it going to come back? Things like that. Then your this merits will be countable and it will be limited. But if your mind is immeasurable, say for example, you see the hospital buying a new machine and you feel that it's a good cause and you really like to support it, and you really hope that a lot of people can benefit from there, and you just give out of a goodwill without thinking of what return you want it to be. Whoever gone past that machine create a good links with you, and you find that you generate immeasurable treasure. But if your mind is limited, then you find that it's limited. That's why we say it's the mindset is very, very important. Yeah.
So what if you know someone, feel like someone else is smarter, you want to compare, you don't feel jealous, but you feel like yourself is like more stupid?
Yeah, so again, this is compare, and you start to feel, because you see, that's why we say when you start to compare, and this is why do we feel that we are less clever, or we are, is this self-arrogant, that when we are better than others, we feel a bit arrogant. When we are not as good as others, we start to feel low in self-esteem. So it's all about the self. So we don't want to have this negative kind of emotion in ourselves. Tell yourself, everyone have their own strength and weakness. It's okay to compare. We learn others' good point. You appreciate your own strength as well. You have some strength that your friends do not have. So recognize yourself, see your own strength and weakness. We rectify our weakness, we maintain or develop further our strength, and rejoice with the person who we are and make full use of ourselves. Yeah, everyone is different, and everyone can be a useful person. Yeah.
So that said, that you mean that we actually can compare without being jealous about that, like. That person much better than me in that case, but I can learn about.
Yeah, you can compare without feeling jealous. That's right. It's not easy. So you just need to make sure that you adjust your mind properly when you compare with your friend, or you just want to learn good things from the friend. So in other words, you appreciate the good point of this friend and say, oh, you have this strength, I wish I can learn from you.
That's right.
Yeah. See, when you have this appreciative joy, you appreciate your friend. Like, say for example, you have a friend who is very good in drawing, and you just feel like you are not as good as him in the drawing. You say, oh, how good! Sometimes I can learn from you the drawing. It make it so easy. Like when I want to show people the map, or I want to teach little kids about something, I can just sketch. Some people are so good. So we don't have that skill. We appreciate and rejoice with that. Yeah. Yeah. So just remember, don't fall into emotionally thinking that once we compare and then just start immediately fall into the trap that I'm not as good as the person, I'm depressed, I'm useless, and start to have all these negative thoughts. It's not necessary. Yeah. Any questions?